big rocks and all that sort of thing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition.
In no way thrown together.
In no way done at the last possible minute.
Because you didn't have one for this week.
No, God, no. Now, you see, John, as the readers know, the amount of in-depth research and preparation, prep, we call it prep in this.
Right,
right.
Right.
A lot of prep, you see.
Yeah, went into this one.
Goes into this, that's right. I tell you what I'm going to do, John. I'm going to allow you, to set the scene, because we've got a lot to talk about, haven't we?
Have we?
Okay. Well, first of all, headline news, 7 days from today is Gig of the Year.
Only if you're listening to this today.
It's going out today.
Yeah, I know it's going out today, but not everyone listens to it on the first day, do they?
Oh.
You should say the date.
I'm going to. I'm going to.
Go on then.
Tuesday, December the 12th. Me can note in your diary.
Because it's the Mick Wall show, isn't it? That's right. I've seen the advertising. There's a Mick Wall show on somewhere.
And apparently I've got a new co-host, John Lydon.
Yeah, I can't remember where this show's happening or anything like that.
Oh, shut up. It's it's me and me, all me, Johnny James Rock.
Live. And we've got to do it now because it's almost sold out. So we've got to do it.
In fact...
Because I said I wasn't going to do it. I said if it's like a kind of, you know, Iron Maiden in about 1995 gig when no one liked them anymore and they're doing half full arenas...
I have no memory. I don't know what you're talking
about.
No,
you have no memory because you weren't there. You didn't get
there.
You jumped onto the grunge. You were aboard the good ship grunge. That's where you were.
No,
ahoy, mateys. Sorry, Rod Who? No, Iron What? No, I don't remember them. Sorry.
I can't help it if in the 90s my soul, you know, was tortured.
You went down Washington Way, as we used to say.
Did I go down Washington Way Washington Way pull me?
Yeah.
Pull me down the Seattle Avenue.
Yeah. So, yeah, I said I'm not doing it if it's like that, but now apparently it's not going to be like that, so I've got to do it.
It's going to be packed.
Yeah.
We've got riot police on standby.
That's right, yeah. LA cops, though, not British cops.
That's
proper
right.
Cops.
That's right, with
batons. Yeah. And
any
guns.
Trouble.
Proper
any trouble.
Guns and, yeah,
you're
exactly.
Get, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. So, December the 12th, the West Hampstead Arts Club.
Rock and roll capital of the world.
Rock and roll capital of the world in Mill Lane, West. The clue is in the name. In West Hampstead.
West Hampstead. He named it after, you know, he thought, no messing about.
No messing about.
You've got the Hammersmith Odeon. You've got the Wembley Arena.
And then you've got if you
the
get
West
big
Hampstead Arts Centre.
Arts Club.
Arts Club, sorry.
Arts Club.
Yeah.
And I actually paid a visit there last week.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Oh, okay.
Well, it was... was it last week?
How do I know?
I don't know, because I have week... I don't know what day it is anymore. But anyway, maybe not last week. The week... Last week? I can't fucking... I think it was the week before. And it was when I was in London, and I'd had this terrible Wednesday night contretemps with a now former... agent who will remain nameless.
Got his ass fired.
Got his ass handed to him.
Yeah. Good.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Politely though, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the following night, my chick, you know, my old lady.
Yeah.
You know, she was supposed to come down to London and hang, but she was ill.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, she couldn't make it.
She couldn't
That's what
it.
She said to you. A little text arrived. You were all dressed up. You had your little boots on and everything. Text arrived. Sorry, I can't make it tonight.
Yeah. I'm going out with Crazy Dave and the guys.
Yeah.
On their hogs.
Yeah.
So I went up there. It's a great venue. I met Terry properly. Well, I've met Terry before, but not I haven't met him lately.
Yeah.
It's a great venue. It is literally a basement, the venue, the gig, where the magic happens.
Yeah.
So you walk in upstairs, and it's like a long bar, very nice. But then you go downstairs to where the gig...
Has he got room for my lighting rig and all that sort of thing?
Well, John, I'm making no promises. Yes. No, it's a really nice room. Quite a long room. Yeah. And then right at the end is the stage. The room is about as wide as the stage.
Right, yeah.
And it was Richard Strange was doing a set. Do you remember Richard Strange? He was in the 70s. He was in Doctors of Madness. And then in the sort of late 70s, early 80s, he became... Well, he just went solo, Richard Strange.
Are we getting dry ice?
Well, obviously.
Yeah, good.
Yeah,
good.
And dancing
I'm not
girls.
Interested in Richard Strange. I just want to know, what is it going to be?
I'm telling you.
It's going to be a rock and roll extravaganza.
I'm giving you a visual.
Yeah. Well,
I'm giving you a visual.
I don't care what rooms don't have the stage as wide as the room. Every room has the stage as wide as the room.
Really?
They're all like
that. I don't remember the marquee being like that.
Don't you? I saw a photo of it the other day, and I thought it was weird.
Well,
it was,
which one? The one in Wardour Street?
Yeah, the one, because it was
classic.
When it was when Shane McGowan had died, and someone put up a photo of Shane McGowan that was in the crowd at this gig, and that they were standing next to him.
Oh, in his punk days.
This is way back,
yeah,
in the punk days. And I thought, bar at the bell. Oh yeah, marquee, Wardour Street.
I remember.
And it was because you went in. You went in the little corridor at the side, and you turned left into the gig, and there was the stage as wide as the room.
Well, I think the room was a little
wider. Little bit wider.
Little bit wider. Yeah. Well, that's not what this is. This is like a narrow.
Right. Can you next time? Can you come with that actual measurement so we can all get this interesting subject underway?
Well, you know, when you work the stage
like I do,
you need
maneuverability. You'll be lucky just not to fall off it. That's all anyone's hoping for.
Well, you know.
Oh, I hope he doesn't fall over. That's what.
Well, we'll be sitting down, so that would be quite a feat if we
you'll
did.
You'll be sitting down.
Oh, you'll be standing.
I won't be sitting down.
Oh, well, you'll be holding your arm aloft like
a
you know, maiden. You know, whoa.
Come on, everyone.
Yeah. We should do that.
Yeah, we should do that. Yeah.
As we walk on, we should. Come on, everybody.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not going.
No, oh, you're not going to do that.
No,
I'm going to do that
no,
on
I'm
my
No, I'm
not
own. Going on with. Yeah, you go on and then you build me up and then I come on. That's how it's going to work.
Do you know what? I think we should.
Yeah.
And
it's
I should
not
say,
gonna be...
I say, now everybody is a little bit shy. As you know. So I want you to go, Johnny James. Like that.
Yeah.
That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Come on, yeah. But anyway, you went to the venue and there's Richard Strange, da 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 da.
No, it was good. It was really good. I mean, nice crowd, very boho, which I like. I felt it was my people.
Yeah.
Terry, God bless him.
This was when you were on your, you know, on your own, been stood up, date night. This is setting the background.
Well,
you've been, since you've been stood up by your wife.
My old lady.
Yeah, your old
lady.
Yeah.
My old lady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've gone down to this venue on your own.
Because I'm brave.
In your
like that,
date night
I'm
clothes.
Fearless, mate. Fearless.
And you're taking what solace you can.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you're looking for solace, Terry is your man.
I mean, I walked in
and there was a pint of Guinness waiting for me on the bar.
Yeah.
And the way it was he was sitting on a stool at the bar, but with his sort of facing the door. So as people came in, he could check their tickets or whatever. So I'm facing him with my back to the bar. And we're chatting, and it's like the magic pint of Guinness. It never seems to go down.
Wow.
It's because he's given instructions.
Never to let Mick Wall's pint drop below, you know, 175 millilitres.
That's what you call a visionary. Yeah. That's a visionary. Yeah. See, us artists, we like to be
Let's wait and see how visionary he feels next Wednesday morning. See if he's still feeling visionary then.
I'm not kidding. We have lucked out with this guy. The man has a vision.
Good.
He has a vision.
Good. So we're all ready for the show.
Yeah.
You've checked out the venue. Uh-huh. The stage, thank God, is as wide as the room. That was what we all needed to know.
The dressing room is great. You have to walk all the way to the stage and then go on the stage, and there's the dressing room there on the side.
Yeah, okay. Ginger Wildheart's coming. He's still coming. He's not cancelled.
No, he's in mighty form.
Yeah. So that's good. Wait. Second part of the show, Ginger.
Yeah.
You know, like it's sort of like the encore or something, you know. The big encore. It's like that's our equivalent of playing Ace of Spades or whatever.
What is? What are you on about?
Well, when he comes on.
That's us playing Ace of Spades.
Yeah, it's like our bit. It's like the bit where the hits start.
Oh, you mean the good stuff?
Yeah. Well, the hits, you know, that sort of.
Now, here's what the hits are. I put this thing out, social media, Twitter and Facebook. Yeah, you've probably heard. I don't see you on there much, but I've heard.
Yeah, I don't, because I don't follow you.
I don't follow you. Yeah. Or maybe I do, who knows? Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say now.
You put out on the social media.
Oh, yeah,
you put
yeah.
something
yeah.
So, out so, on the wires.
Mick Wall's Monsters of Rock show, which I know
featuring Mick Wall.
You love. No, Johnny James Rotten, guest star Ginger Wildheart. And what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, so I put out, I said, come along, me, John, Ginger, plus our greatest hits. Kirk Cobain.
Yes, he'll be there, definitely.
The Dealer.
The Dealer will be discussed, I'm sure.
Saudi Money. That's another hit. Saudi Money.
Yeah.
All.
Well, you need Saudi money to get in.
Absolutely. Yeah. All in the actuality.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah,
very good. And Matthew Tripp, we'll talk about that. Ginger's a great conspiracy theory man, I hear.
Well, he's a smart guy.
He loves a conspiracy theory.
Because
so
he knows that's where the truth
he
is.
He will enjoy that one. Yeah.
That's because he knows where the truth is.
Rock's biggest conspiracy of all. That's what we call it.
Yeah, people still not the talking about it to this day.
Marvellous. It's going to be marvellous.
Yeah, but you are, obviously, because you've never... Yeah. You're not one to let it go.
Yeah,
no, you're going
to so
see
this
it
is merely a stopgap before that great night. That's what we're getting around to saying. This podcast is merely a stopgap.
Well, you know, I think we can still bring it.
Well, there's been
the pain.
There's been a lot of death.
There
lot
has
of
been
death
a lot of
this week.
There has,
because Shane McGowan died, and you're not strictly speaking a rock star.
Well,
but
you say that.
He embodied a lot of the qualities of the rock star.
He really did. And not the original Pogues drummer, but in the latter part of their career.
Was it Nico McBrain?
No. It was a friend of mine, Danny Heatley.
Oh, right. Okay.
Who's a friend to this show. He plays the drums on that music you hear at the start of the pod.
Oh, Roker. Yeah.
Danny was in the Exploited, Boot Hill Foot Tappers. Oh, God, loads of bands. Including the latter part of the Pogues, and then when Shane formed his own group, the Popes,
yes,
Danny was the drummer, and he used to regale me with stories of Shane.
Well, I mean, he remains the drunkest person I've ever seen in the flesh.
Where did you see him?
One afternoon in the Russell Arms. Oh, remember the
what,
Russell
in,
Arms, the pub,
Mornington Crescent.
Yeah, the pub
where
over
Kerrang,
the
yeah. Kerrang. Yeah. Well, he came to Kerrang.
Well, he came to Sounds.
Sounds, right.
He was friends with a load of the people from Sounds, I think. Anne and Mary Scanlon, he was friends with.
Ah. The biddies, as they were known.
Yeah.
It's funny how he knew them.
Yeah. I was young and impressionable.
Of course
you were. This would have been about 1988, something like that.
People forget that you were once young.
Yeah.
And they get used to seeing the old
yeah,
face.
Yeah.
They just think about of you like that, you know.
1988, about then, you know, probably at the height of the, was that about the height of the Pogues? I don't really know.
I'd love to see you and Shane McGowan
together. We were to, well, we were very briefly together.
Diet Coke,
yeah,
wasn't that
something like that. I'd have been standing by the pool table with Ray Palmer.
With an orange juice.
Yeah.
Shane McGowan. And there was Shane McGowan.
Yeah, just, I mean, just, I mean, you can't describe unless you've seen someone that drunk. You sort of look at them and you go, how are you, how can you possibly still be standing upright?
Yeah.
That sort of drunk, you know.
Well, I think because in his arsenal, as they say, he had more than the booze, you see. He had other pick-me-ups.
Yeah, that got him actually back to the bar again. Yeah.
Danny was telling me one night somewhere on the Rocky Road, because they would tour everywhere, he said he took about, he literally took about 50 tabs of acid.
Right.
As well as, you know,
everything
a
else.
Very small sherry, yeah. You know, and went on and did the gig.
It's amazing to report that he has died. I mean, you might be astonished to hear that.
You didn't see that weird documentary on him a few years ago?
When he had his teeth done.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was bizarre, wasn't it? He has all his teeth done, like hours of dentistry, and then
like,
he decides...
Not just hours, but weeks and months.
Yeah, and then he decides they're too white,
yeah.
And he has them changed.
He has them taken out again.
Yeah, and put back in...
Because they were, what do you call it, plug-ins?
Yeah, veneers or whatever they are. Well, they were whole, like, they drill into your skull, don't they?
Yeah. Plug it.
And then put the teeth over the top.
Yeah, over the pegs.
Yeah.
So he didn't really have many teeth to begin with.
See,
so
some would have
enough.
Suggested he already had the pegs. They should have just put the teeth straight on. Would have been quicker and less expensive.
What I liked was the fact, I loved that scene where I think, I can't remember whether it was when he had the really white teeth or when he came back to get the
brown
teeth.
Well, he only has the white teeth really briefly, doesn't he? And he does look, in fairness to him, he looks fucking ridiculous.
He looks like Mr. Ed the Talking Horse, doesn't he?
You can see. Because you're used to, like for years, he's had either blacked little stumpy teeth or no teeth at all.
Or no teeth at all.
For years.
Yeah.
And then overnight, he's got
the ring of confidence.
He's got a set of choppers. He's got about 35 teeth on each row.
And they're all like
and they're
really
all like
white.
That kind of, that sort of so white they're almost blue, you know. They're just bright, bright white.
And you see him looking at them in the mirror.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking,
and
mate,
the dentist is there because the dentist is sort of standing over him, giving him the mirror. Because it's like, I mean, if you're a dentist... This is like your Sistine Chapel.
Absolutely.
You know, if you can make Shane McGowan's teeth look good.
Look like the Osmonds.
Yeah. You can make literally anybody's teeth.
He probably was taking pictures to put
on
his
website.
Yeah,
you would be. You'd be getting, look,
whatever,
you know, look, you know, meth heads everywhere. Have your teeth been dissolved by meth?
Rich meth heads.
Yeah, rich meth. Come and see me because I've done Shane McGowan.
That is a calling card, isn't
it? It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, you think you got bad teeth? I did Shane McGowan.
And look at him now. He looks like, as you say, he looks like...
Donny Osmond.
Yeah, he does.
1972.
Well, from the lips down...
That old Shergar.
From the lips down and inside, he looks like Donny Osmond. The rest of him didn't look like Donny Osmond.
No, not really.
The rest of him still looked like Shane McGowan, which is where the kind of teeth look some...
The disconnect.
The dissonance. The cognitive...
cognitive dissonance.
The cognitive dissonance.
You see, now, Shane was a man that worked with cognitive dissonance throughout his career.
Yeah, long career.
But one of the funniest scenes was, there were many funny scenes, but so he's at the dentist and he's sitting in an armchair because at no point do you ever see him stand, you know. He's sitting in this armchair and he's got dark glasses on. And he's got the big old pearly white gnashers and he's smoking. Right. And his wife, Victoria, is it? She's brought a friend who does Reiki. Is that bit? So Shane's sitting in this armchair, clearly out of his brain, with the dark glasses on. It's pissing. It's Dublin. It's pissing with rain outside. They haven't had sunlight for 3 years. He's got the sunglasses on. He's got a fag going.
He's got the teeth.
He's got the gnashers. And this woman's like, ooh. She's waving her arms, dragging it out of him, the bad energy. Yeah. And she's going, can you feel it, Shane? He's
like, oh. If you get the bad energy out of him, there's not going to be a lot left, is there?
So then he goes back 2 weeks later to say, no, you've got to take them all out.
Yeah, he goes back for another sort of, I guess they sort of check how they've bedded in or whatever, you know. And they're talking about the colour again, aren't they? And he's saying, I don't think it's right.
No.
I don't think it's right.
No, I need tobacco stain.
Well, you're for comic effect, you're exaggerating there. He doesn't have tobacco stained teeth
he
put
does.
Back in. He gets the colour chart out and he goes down a few notches.
He goes, it's like
he dials the opticians.
It down. He goes right to the bottom line
he
there.
He just dials it down because if you see pictures of him in later life, he's still got the bright white. I mean, they don't fall out or anything. He's still got the bright white teeth. I mean, they're just not as bright as they first were.
Oh, I thought he'd deliberately gone for the fag stained.
No.
No?
You don't think that.
Yes, I do.
That's not what happened.
That is my memory. You cannot. Hang on. Are you trying to get inside my head? You're gaslighting.
But you see, but he's much like yourself. He was what they called, and I saw this referred, I hope this isn't pejorative, I saw this in one of the obituaries or something. He was what was referred as a London Paddy.
Ah.
The London Irish.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
So he sort of, his background was from Ireland, but he grew up in London.
His mum and dad were Irish immigrants in the 50s, like my own.
Exactly, yeah.
And many other people. I was trying to remember where it was. Shepherd's Bush Empire. Who was I going to see? I can't remember. It was someone weird like Peter Frampton or something.
Yeah.
This is just 10 years ago or something. And
maybe that's where Shane got the idea for the teeth. He saw Peter Frampton. Peter Frampton had the teeth.
But there's this unreleased, people don't know this, but there's an unreleased Shane McGowan track where he's actually using the original Frampton.
That wah, wah, wah. Yeah. Vocoder, is that what it's called?
Wah, 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 wah,
it's what the old Richie Sambora uses it on. That one, didn't it?
Yeah. The most unsexy looking instrument you've ever seen.
It's basically like a that pipe that the dentist cleans your mouth out with. It's like that. And you kind of wow.
So I'm queuing to go in and I'm like, what the fuck's he? He's in front of me in the queue.
What, Shane McGowan?
Yeah.
Go and see Peter Frampton.
Yes. And I'm going, the fuck, man, you know. Yeah. But then I realised, oh, it's like Saturday night in London and it's just somewhere to sort of be for an hour or so, isn't it? Maybe it wasn't Peter Frampton.
Maybe this is like the teeth thing. Maybe it was, I don't know.
No, it was incongruous.
U2 or someone like that.
It was incongruous. Right? This is Shane McGowan, right? And he's saying to the woman in the box office, I'm on the guest list. And she's going, well, like, what was the name again? I'm thinking, are you kidding me? And she's looking, she's going, no, I can't
There's
see
no, no one down of that.
I can't see anybody like that.
Yeah.
And so this kind of lumbering mind or whatever goes and has a word with her. And she's like, oh! And she lets him in.
Yeah.
You know, and then I gave her my name. I didn't even, I mean, she saw me.
She just sort of just waved you through.
Issued the pass.
Yeah.
He was definitely a character, that's for sure.
So, I mean, he passed away, and then you were saying that some other guy you knew passed away.
Well, I didn't know him, but I think he knew of me,
okay.
Or he did back in the day, and that was...
We all knew of you back in the day, didn't we?
The original guitarist in Killing Joke, who was Geordie.
See, that band Killing... Right, do you say Killing Joke, like you just said it? Say it again.
Killing Joke.
Or do you say Killing Joke?
What was the difference?
Well, there's Killing, it's like the emphasis, isn't it?
Go on,
sort of like an American thing, you know, like.
Well, I say it American.
Well, no, I'm just saying I've never known how you're supposed to say it. Are you supposed
killing
to say.
Killing Joke.
Are you supposed to say with the emphasis on the two words, like Killing Joke? Or are you supposed to say Killing Joke?
I can't detect any difference there whatsoever. Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters, when they did Saturday Night Live the first time, it was Christopher Walken was the guest host. You know, the guest host always introduces the live.
I don't, because I never see it.
Okay, well, you know, there is a show.
Yes, I know. I know of it. I don't. Yeah,
you, that
don't
feedback you have from people going, he must know who Krusty the Clown is.
Yeah, I can believe. I don't, but I do now, obviously.
Yeah. So anyway, the guest host, when it comes to the musical segment, the guest host comes out and says, "And now, whoever's on that week," and before he went to do it, he said to Grohl, he asked him how he should, like you just did, how should I pronounce the band's name? And they're like, what do you mean? And he goes, it's Christopher Walken. He goes, well, is it Foo Fighters?
Yeah.
Or is it Foo Fighters?
Yeah. Yeah, you see. So it wasn't a stupid question, was
no, it?
It
was a stupid question. Oh, yeah. It's okay. Not like Killing Joke, is it? No, Killing Joke.
Oh, anyway, yeah, go on.
You need a bit of Reiki.
Killing Joke.
Get the bad energy.
Because Killing Joke, as I call them, they...
There's only one way to say Killing Joke.
You said Killing Joke. Like, it's all one word. You said Killing Joke.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Do you get it now? Killing
no,
joke.
No. Anyway. Reiki, you need Reiki.
Yeah. Killing Joke. Mm. They're always one of those bands that, to me, were kind of on the periphery of heavy metal. You know, they weren't metal, but you had various heavy metal guys who kind of like them.
Including Jimmy Page.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay.
Jimmy Page loved them. Although, I'm sure that had nothing to do with the fact that the front man, the leader, Jazz Coleman, had a very deep and abiding interest in the occult.
Oh, okay.
That wasn't why
that
Jimmy...
That wouldn't have caught Jimmy's eye.
That wouldn't have... No. That was, wouldn't even been a blip on his radar.
No.
Well, they were... Yeah, they were great. I mean, they were... You know, Metallica covered one of their songs, and so they were sort of punk metal, or they would have railed against any categorization, I guess. But
Yeah. They
always came over as very kind of militant, or you know, you didn't mess, badasses, you didn't
mess. Right.
So I'm going to say summer of 81.
Oh God, long.
Oh
time.
Yeah, going back.
I mean,
82. I can't remember, but round there, it must have been 81. No, fuck me. I can't remember, John. Maybe it was 80.
Yeah, could have been.
But I was writing for Sounds, and this will feed into my legend really nicely, because I told you! And I was reviewing bands all the time for Sounds, and blah, 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 blah. And it was a Saturday night, and Killing Joke were playing somewhere in Kilburn. What was the place in Kilburn? There was a place in Kilburn, you know, the place.
Yeah.
And I really didn't fancy it, you know. Do you ever get that?
No, yeah. What, should we go to the gig or should we just stay here?
Yes, yeah. Yes, exactly. Do a bit of Reiki.
A bit like your wife the other night.
Well, no, I covered yeah. I covered all bases, you see.
Yeah.
Because I was, in those days, you know, sharing a flat with people, and there's always loads of people around. I'm going, oh, fucking hell, I've got to go out to see, I'm reviewing a band. Oh, who? Oh, Killing Joke. Killing Joke? Everybody got really excited.
Did they?
Well, this couple did, yeah.
Yeah.
One of whom was a drug dealer.
Who saw their sales picking up. Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'd love to go. I love Killing Joke. They're my favourite band, blah, 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 blah. And I went, oh. I said, well, do you want to go? You know, I'll give you my tickets or whatever I had. He's, yeah. What's the catch? I said, well, the catch is you have to tell me about the gig so I can write about it, okay? So off he goes, comes back about one in
so
the morning.
Listen, so you'd asked an ultra-reliable drug dealer.
They were his favourite band, he said.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, go on. No, no, I'm just checking.
Well,
yeah.
To be honest, it was out of the goodness of my heart because he was a proper fan.
Yeah.
So I send him to the gig and he comes back hours later. What was it like? Oh, awesome. Fucking awesome. You know, so tell me more. Well, they were just great, you know. In what way were they great? Oh, man, I mean, fucking hell, jazz, man. He was great.
Yeah.
Fuck me, you know. So I cobble together a very, very positive review. It's a very good review, right?
Because that's what you should do. If you haven't seen the gig, you shouldn't be negative.
No.
This is just a tip for people out there if you're reviewing.
And if you happen to miss the show.
If you just happen to miss the show, can happen to any of us.
But your drug dealer has gone.
If you happen to not bother to play the album, any of those things.
Track three.
Yeah, track three. This is the live equivalent of track three.
These are the tools you need as a
professional. To survive in rock journalism.
Particularly back
then.
This
is rock writing 101.
It's the original template.
If inevitably you find yourself in a position where you can't go to the gig.
You can't go. It's unavoidable.
Yeah.
It's unavoidable.
Yeah.
Because you are,
in
fact,
sitting down. And you've had to send a drug dealer in your place.
That was sort of a coincidental.
Yeah.
He was a big
fan. His occupation wasn't relevant at that
moment
in time.
Well, what caught my eye was that he was like just...
A fan.
Like, I'm their biggest, I know everything, you know. So he comes back, tells me nothing.
Yeah.
So I write a fairly sort of generic, I guess. But at the end of the day...
Thumbs up.
I have seen the future, you know.
Yeah, brilliant.
Brilliant.
Kilburn, what a night it was.
One of the best gigs I've seen all year.
Yeah.
One of those, you know. There's no internet or social media in those days. So cut to about a week later, I get a letter at the sounds office.
Yeah.
And it's quite a few pages long, and it's written in hand, but it's quite sort of, in my memory, again, my memory isn't enormously reliable, but it was all sort of green ink and red ink. And it literally began, you didn't fucking go to the gig, did you?
Yeah, and you knew immediately you'd been busted.
But I'm thinking, who's this?
Yeah.
It was them.
Yeah.
It was the band.
The band.
It was like, I mean, I was trembling, you know, because not only busted, but they're going to get me for it, right?
What was that, what they said in the letter?
Yeah. Like, we know where you live. We know where you work. You know, it was all this.
Well, everyone knew where you worked. Worked at Sounds. You need to be Sherlock Holmes to work that one out, do you?
Yeah. So
what did it? Was it? Were there threats in the? I'm interested in this now. Were there specific threats in the lesson? Was it like, we're going to take your left leg and shove it up your?
Well, I don't know, because I'll be honest with you, I was
didn't
so really shocked.
Started
I
crying.
Didn't finish it. You know, I was just like, get the Reiki. You know. So
did you immediately confess to whoever was the editor at the time?
No.
No, exactly.
Not a pussy.
Yeah.
I'm not a snitch.
Yeah, not a grass.
I'm not a grass.
Snitches get stitches.
That's right, man. Plus, I got my drug dealer. He swears it's all true.
Yeah,
I believe him, obviously.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So what were they annoyed about?
Well,
and they got a good review. What the fuck do they want?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. But anyway.
Somewhat naive. I think they're being naive. The band are being naive, I think. If they imagine that journalists stand there for the whole gig thinking how fantastic they are.
We're starting to get a book to review.
That to me is naivety. in the extreme.
Yes, John. You see,
just be happy you got a good review.
Exactly.
That's what everyone wants, a good review.
Who cares if the bloke is there?
Yeah, who cares? Exactly. Who cares? Who cares in the end?
Who cares?
Yeah.
In the end,
yeah.
Who cares
if he saw 3 songs or 10 songs?
Who cares if you just sent your drug dealer and he came back with a fairly minimal report, but basically saying the band was all two thumbs up. That's right. But anyway, it gets worse. So I don't think I did read the whole letter. Maybe I did, but I immediately traumatized, blocked it out. You know. So in those days, I shared a flat in Chalk Farm with Sandy Robertson, who later turned up in my book Paranoid as Mandy.
Yeah.
So it's Saturday night.
With no one had any idea who you were referring to. I mean,
no.
Mandy.
Yeah. Any resemblance to any true life
character. To the guy called Sandy.
Entirely coincidental.
Also coincidentally a Scottish music writer who was a heroin addict.
In the book he was Welsh. It's true.
Brilliant.
Yeah, see?
Brilliant.
Covered my tracks.
That's amazing.
You'd never have known.
Brilliant, yeah.
So it's about, honestly, it's late. It's like 11 o'clock at night or midnight or something. The phone goes. You know, in the days we've got one phone flat. Anyway, I pick it up and it's this guy saying, we're on our way. We know you're there. You know, and we're going to fucking, you know, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, right? So hang up. And Sandy's a bigger panic merchant than me.
Yeah.
He's like, call the cops. Yeah. He's got to be, call the cops. I can't do the accent, but call the cops.
Yeah.
I said, Sandy, if I call the cops, they're going to come in here. We're going to need to tidy up a little bit, you know? So I call the cops. And now we're fucking vacuuming shit. Anything that moves is being vacuumed and
flushing the toilet.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Next thing. Oh, and here was the other weird thing. We lived in a flat at the top of a posh house in Chalk Farm, but the rest of the house was owned by a posh family.
Yeah,
and they'd gone away for the weekend, so we were alone in the place. And I'm going.
Could you get onto their floors? You know, could you get onto the house? Oh, so you could just go and hide in there.
Oh, I didn't think of that. No, all I thought was, how did they know the place would be empty?
Right, yeah.
Because you'd have to come in the front door and then you go up the stairs and then up the stairs.
Right, so it didn't have a separate entrance or anything?
No. Wow, you're literally part of the house, but it's one of those big houses in Chalk Farm near Primrose Hill, you know. And so we're doing all this. Next thing. Ring on the doorbell. Ring. We're going, they're here. I'm looking out the window to see if it's the cops. Yeah. It's not the cops. Call the cops. Don't fuck around, you know. So we're both going, what do we do? You know. And we did nothing, of course, because we're shiting bricks. Yeah. Killing joke have come to kill me. Next thing, here comes the police car up the road, slowly. And we're going, and I open the window. He's there.
The bloke down there.
Yeah. Bloke wanders off, gets into his car, and takes off. And the cops pull up. I'm like, he's there. They said, well, just come in, sir. There's a guy, a male cop, and a female cop. And they come up. Of course, they're cops, so immediately they're like clocking the joint. They're like, oh, yeah. I can't imagine what this row is about, you know. Is there anybody out there you can think of, sir, that would want to kill you?
He said, don't you read sounds?
So that was a big night. Eventually we had to, like, how do we get rid of the cops?
How do we get rid of Killing Joke?
No, now it's the cops.
Right, yeah.
No, one thing.
Yeah, but you could have said that, but you missed, he drove off.
Yeah, but they
from Killing Joke. Yeah,
but I look back now and I just think,
was it him?
Well, I don't know. No, I was just thinking with the cops. That's all I could focus on at that moment. Because if there's one worse thing than being killed by Killing Joke, it's
so you just said
going
it then.
Off to
you
prison.
Said killing joke. You just did it then.
Yeah.
Okay.
And how do you say it?
Killing joke.
Killing joke. What the fuck are you on about?
I can't believe...
Foo Fighters. Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
So finally the cops fucking leave. And it's now like 2 a.m. And spent a very restless night, you know. Also, I'm ringing the drug dealer going, did you tell me you did go, right? You did see them? Yeah. They were awesome. So, oh, fuck me, you know. And that was, touch wood, the last time.
And they never came after you again?
I think they were very, very clever. It may even have just been a mini cab they sent. You
know
what I mean?
Yeah.
But what freaked me out was they obviously had the address.
Yeah.
And I don't know why this is a blur. So maybe it was more than a week later, because by then I'd started working at Virgin Records. And so I did go to work in the morning. But for weeks and months, especially coming home at night in the dark.
Yeah.
Because there's no dodgy people in Portobello Road after dark in those days, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah. So when I read Geordie died,
yeah,
I remembered
you're not,
all that.
He said, yeah, not going to get me now, are you?
I doubt he was the problem.
Yeah.
I think it was Jazz,
whatever his name was, yeah.
He's going to come and get you now. I didn't say that, Jazz. It's John making fun, not me. I love
you. I haven't said anything about him. I just queried how you pronounce his band name, I'm sure.
Yeah, I've never heard... In all these long years, I've never heard anybody actually ask how you say Killing Joke.
See, you did it again.
What have I done?
I refuse to believe you're not doing it deliberately.
Doing what?
The way you say Killing Joke.
How do you say it?
Killing Joke.
Killing Joke.
You see, now you're doing it more slowly. Anyway, never mind all that. That was one death you wanted to discuss.
Well, we are coming up this time of year, of course.
This is, we're coming up to the end of the podcast. That's what I'm checking on my phone.
This time of year, I'm always thoughtful, mindful. I always think about Lemmy, because he died this time of year.
Yes, that's true.
His birthday was on Christmas Eve.
Was it?
And in 2015, I had begun writing a book about Motorhead. He knew about it.
Yeah, he hated it. Did he send someone around to your house? Ring the bell?
No, because when you send a drug dealer to a Motorhead gig, they give you a fucking prize. They don't try and kill you.
Yeah, and also, let's face it, you know, you could review a Motorhead gig without being there. You pretty much know what they're going to play. And you pretty much know what they're going to sound like. And whether it or not it's a good gig is almost entirely dependent on whether or not you like
drugs
Motorhead.
You've actually taken.
Yeah, and whether you like Motorhead or not. Yeah. I mean, consistency was a byword, really.
I remember Motorhead. The first time I ever saw them in a sort of a big setting was Friars in Aylesbury.
Yeah.
And it was that typical PR thing that used to go on. This is like 79 or something. They used to go on in those days where if you couldn't get people to a gig in London, you'd put on a coach and make it a big, fun thing.
Fun day out.
Yeah, and I remember the coach leaving London, you know, early evening, and they had blow-up dolls in every other seat. They had loads of booze, and they had Motorcycle Irene and a friend of hers as our delectable hostess.
Wow.
To give us a spin, Anthea.
Yeah.
Except it was Motorcycle Irene. And she'd be like, you going to drink that? I go, oh, look, fucking drink it. Get it down your fucking neck. And they're all in like stockings and suspenders and leather jackets. And, you know, I was terrified.
Yeah, again.
I should have called Irene when this whole
she just sort of kissed. She wasn't afraid of Jazz Jizz, whatever his name is.
You're so
going
to get
you keep doing that. You keep going,
I'm telling you, these are bad motherfuckers.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I made my peace with them, you see.
Yeah, yeah.
As I have with humanity.
Well, yes.
So,
So Lemmy knows you're going to do this book.
Yes, and in fact, and his people. You know, it wasn't, you know, I knew all those people. And it was like, we're going to do something on the phone, another sort of top-up interview. And I heard he was really ill. I mean, I'd heard it before, but people yeah. were saying, this is it. And I said, oh, fuck. I said, I'll tell you what, then we'll do it after Christmas. You know, hopefully you'll be feeling better.
Yeah.
And next thing, bless his heart, he was gone.
Mm.
Did you hear about how the moment he died?
No.
Because you know he had that apartment down the road from the Rainbow.
Yes, yes.
He was sitting at home with the owner of the Rainbow. Probably was Michael. I can't remember his name. He'll kill me for not remembering his name. But I know who it was, and a good guy. And they brought a video game, the one that they have at the Rainbow. They brought a version of that so he could sit at home and play.
Oh, right, yeah.
And apparently he was just sitting there, and the next thing, he was gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he would have wanted, probably.
That's what you want.
They people say that, don't they? Oh, it's what he would have wanted.
Die with your white boots on. Yeah.
Probably would have wanted not to die.
Well, yes, but we all have to die at some point.
Yeah.
And if you're going to die, I would have thought,
yeah,
sitting
just
there
like,
playing the game that you love to play, probably smoking two cigarettes at once.
Yeah.
But
very much like Shane McGowan, a life lived on his own terms.
Yeah.
That was the thing.
Or people like Charles Bukowski.
Yeah. I mean, you just lived one way, didn't change, didn't need to change, didn't want to change on their own terms, and probably accepted that given the lifestyle, it wasn't going to be into their 90s, you know.
And why would you want to be anyway?
Well, I would.
Oh, don't worry.
I'll probably be quite sprightly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you're very boyish.
Yeah, I'll be one of those sort of old people that everyone likes, you know.
They'll be going, look, he can still throw a cricket ball, even though he's 96.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be quite good.
It's a shame about the legs, but when you push him, he can still throw that ball.
Yeah, there you go.
And on that bombshell.
The end. Well, we will see you.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
You go on.
We will see you.
See you.
And if you don't come, expect to get a letter written in several different coloured inks.
And a fucking doorbell ring at midnight.
Were they felt tips, do you think?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, see, felt tips, not different ink. If you say different ink, it makes you sound, you know, like it's mysterious. And if it was felt tips, it just makes it sound like it was a child that did it.
No, my friend. This was like a 19th century detective murder.
Oh.
Holmes, sort of Holmesian.
And you were the victim, or the intended victim.
Yes, I was.
But thank God you survived.
Yes, not everybody would say that, but thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll see you on December the 12th. We are on stage hard at 7 p.m.
Is it so? Okay, right, great.
7 p.m. Doors open at 6.
I'll try and remember that.
Yeah, cheers, yeah. Mm. On stage at 7. A little break at about
quarter to eight.
Yeah. Then back on 15 minutes, whatever it is later.
Because we've been through this before. It's got a very strict curfew.
9 p.m.
You've got to go home at 9 p.m.
Well, I think they have to go home, but we have to finish they can go home.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I think the suggestion is that our demographic may be, you know, more of a...
Well, sprightly.
More December than May.
Yeah, sprightly.
Sprightly.
Yeah, that's what they're going to be.
Sprightly.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we will see.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How do I stop this, Fern?